Cool, there we go. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jeff, and I am an alcoholic.
Hello.
Would everyone please turn off their mobile phones or switch them to a silent profile, and please try and keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In support of AA singleness of purpose, we respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics. And when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard AA can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation in protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers followed by a fourth speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be opened to the floor and closed at 9 o'clock. Can we please have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Tonight's final speaker is Mark.
My name is Mark, an alcoholic.
Hi, Mark.
First of all, I'd like to thank Alexis and Wayne for starting this meeting up, and old timers like John F, you know, and Andy J for being my sponsor 15 years. You know, when I first arrived here, the smart money wasn't on for somebody like me to recover from alcoholism. You know, I thought I tried everything that I could think of, and nothing worked. I hadn't really tried anything, you know. But I'll go back a bit. As a young kid, you know, I always knew there was something wrong. I always felt ill at ease in my own skin. Felt like I couldn't fit in. Always wanted somebody else's parents to be my parents. And it just went on like that all my life, you know. I'd try and make friends, and I'd end up doing something stupid and push my way. And I'd pick up alcohol at an early age, and for me, it was like an on button. Everything became multicoloured. It took the edge off of life. I was able to go to the lads, talk to the girls. And as Jackie said, you know, it was all right in the beginning, but rapidly, you know, the consequences came thick and fast. You know, my parents and grandparents and family members could see where I was going to end up, and they would quite clearly tell me, you know, you're going to end up in the gutter, unemployable, useless, nobody's going to want to know you. And I would think, it's not going to happen to me. My Scots pride won't let it happen. I'm not that bad. You know, and on I went. You know, I thought it was a town I lived in. You know, where I grew up, it was commonly known as Wine Valley, because everybody drank this fortified wine because it was cheap. And I moved away from there and carried on doing exactly what I was doing before. I moved from Scotland to London and carried on drinking. Moved from London back to Scotland after a number of years and carried on drinking. You know, I would get dead-end jobs where I could basically do what I want and get away with it to an extent. And then I would just chuck the job in because it got in the way of my drinking, you know. And it wasn't before long, you know, I was in and out of hospitals and doctor surgeries, you know, places like that, and doctors keep telling me, if you keep drinking the way you are, you're going to die. We've just pumped your stomach. We've given you resus. And this, going by your records, this isn't the first time. Yet 10 minutes later, I was chucking cider down my throat because it was all I could think about. It was nothing else mattered. You know, and it just kind of stayed like that for a long, long time, you know. My sponsor says it quite often, you know. Often I hit the bottom quickly and I stayed at the bottom. I moved along the bottom comfortably. You know, putting myself in dangerous positions didn't bother me. The fact that I upset people didn't bother me, because as long as I had what I needed, I didn't have to think about it. You know, I arrived back at my mother's house, 8.5 stone weight, you know, just been released from police cells. And her famous words would be, he's done it again, and again, and again. And she phoned my father home from work, and he would just take me to somebody's house and give me some money and say, your mother doesn't want you in the house, you can't be trusted anymore, she can't even look at you. And I'll just take his money and I'll just go quite happily. Think, well, they don't see, well, don't hurt them. You know, and that kind of mentality for a long, long time, you know, I moved around the country a lot, and I thought, what my family knows, what my family doesn't see won't hurt them. You know, and about 20 years ago, I first arrived at Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and someone said to me, you know, when's the last time you spoke to your parents? And I went, ugh. And he said, oh, seriously, when's the last time you spoke to your parents? I said, about 5 years ago. And he made me phone up my parents, and it was my father answered the phone. And he broke down in tears, you know, and his words were, thank God we didn't know if you were alive or dead or in prison, because I just had no concern for anybody but me and what I needed, you know. And I went along to AA meetings. This was up in North Devon. People kept saying, keep coming back, it works if you work it. And I kept going back to meetings for 18 months, and I was holding onto the seat like this, terrified. My head was totally messed, like John spoke of. People come up to me and go, you alright, mate? You alright? And I'd be like, yeah. Deep inside, my head was screaming. Everything about me was screaming, get away from me. I don't want to know you, I don't like you. So I didn't even like myself at the time. You know, and at the end of 18 months, it was a beautiful summer's day. I sat down by the waterfront. I had a roof over my head, clothes on my back. Nothing really to moan about in the great scheme of things. But I had my head in my hands and I was in tears, because I had two conversations going on in my head at the same time. One's going like this, go on, you know you want it. And the other one's going, don't do it, you know what's going to happen. You know, and that's what it was like. What I didn't know then is what I know now, was once that thought had triggered in my mind, you know, what we call mental twist obsession, it was a foregone conclusion that I was going to go and get drunk, and that's what I did. You know, and at the time it was a relief. I was then shipped down to Plymouth into another halfway house. And I'd heard about this meeting called Rhodes, and I'd heard all this nonsense what people speak about. They control you. They tell you what to do. You got to wear a shirt and a tie when you share. And I thought, they control me. Well, that's good, because I'm out of control. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've reached that point where I knew I couldn't drink, but I knew I couldn't live without it. I was at that jumping off point. I was suicidal without the guts to do anything about it, you know? And I came along here 15 years ago, and you guys carried a message, you know? You spoke about what it was like when you're out there, what your thoughts were, the way you drank. And then you told me how you recovered. And I looked at people like John F. and Andy J. and I thought, it might work for them. It's not going to work for me. I'm just a bum from the streets of Glasgow. There's no way that it's going to work. You know, but you all told me if I was able to shut my mouth for once and do what I was told, that I too could recover from alcoholism rapidly, you know? And I still didn't believe it. You know, and I always remember this, John. You phoned me every day when I was in that dry house. Come and meet me for coffee, dinner time. And I'd be like, ah, ah, ah. You'd be like, be there. You know, it's people like John who carried the message to me, Andy J, who sponsored me, you know, who showed me the way forward. Even when I didn't think it was going to work, when at times when I didn't believe it, you know, just by simply doing the simple suggestions that was given to me to do on a daily basis, yeah, I've managed to remain sober through both good and bad times, you know. Life's life, you know, it's not all about a bed of roses, you know. I come into recovery, I got a job, I've lost job, I've got married, I've got kids, you know, I've had illness in recovery, you know, but with having a sponsor, working the 12 steps, being in the middle of this home group, being involved in service and remaining sponsible, it's enabled me to stay sober no matter what. You know, little Andy talks about it, you know, you can come in here and it can be the worst day of your life, you can leave here and it can be the beginning of the best years of your life. You know, and that's the way I see it, you know. This program can work for anybody. All you need is step one. You know, willing to do one simple suggestion on a daily basis, willingness to follow your sponsor's guidance. And, you know, for me, it's one thing I always remain by. You know, I need to remain humble, keep a degree of humility, because if I don't, my ego will outgrow me, you know, and then I'll think that I don't need to be here anymore. I'm 15 years, I've got it now, you know. That's why, you know, when my sponsor suggests me to do something, I do it on an old timer like John, Wayne, Alexis, the GSR. When they ask me to do something, I do it. You know, I may ask them questions, how to do it, but I never question my sponsor or old timers, you know, because they've been around a lot longer than what I have. Done a lot more in recovery than what I have, and a lot more experience. I still need to remain responsible and follow guidance. Okay. All right. Service. When I first arrived here, I was asked to stand on the door and greet newcomers, and I thought, you've got to be joking. You know, I couldn't look people in the face, I couldn't hold a conversation, I wouldn't say boo to a goose, you know, and I had to do it because I wanted what new people had. You know, I was told that if I wanted to recover, I had to do as you had done, and it was as simple as that. You know, when I was asked, moved on to doing tea and coffee, and I thought, I am not going to remember 60 people. I ain't that smart. But I did it, you know, and so on. You know, gone out and done talks at halfway houses and homeless shelters. You know, and sometimes it's annoying. Sometimes I feel like, why? When I'm going there week after week after week. And it's just like knocking on dead wood. But my sponsor always reminds me, you know, it might be that one person who's there that one time that you could get into the rooms to recover. And that's all you're there for, is to help maybe one person recover, to carry that message. You know, through working service, you know, it enabled me to go and get a full-time job. You know, and I thought, I'm never going to be able to work. I'm just a bum. I've never worked a day in my life. The principles that this group has taught me through being involved in service, I put in place at the job where I worked, you know, and it stood me in good stead. You know, I was made redundant from that job. You know, I phoned up my sponsor, the first thing I did, and he said, you spoken to your wife? And I went, no, not yet. He said, okay, calm down, phone your wife. Because I was like, he said, Mark, you're sober. You've got a program, work your program. You know, buried my father in recovery, you know, I was able to go back up to Scotland, be there for my mother, support my mother, whereas if it'd been 10 years before that, it would have been me turning up absolutely wrecked. Or I've been told, you're not even allowed to go there. Don't bother. You know, but I was able to go up and support my mother and be there for her. And it's all through putting into use the principles that I learned through this group, you know, through sponsorship, through being involved in service, you know. I always try and maintain, you know, no matter what, I'm only a little cog in a big machine, and I like to stay that way. You know, the fact that I'm 15 years sober, it's good for the newcomers to see it, because it means that there is long-term sobriety, but for me, sobriety is only one day at a time, you know. I have to get up tomorrow and do exactly the same things as what I did today. I have to do my suggestions, I have to do my phone calls, you know. If I don't, my head spirals automatically. The slightest thing, the dog barks because somebody walked past the window, and I would be off. I want to kill it. Now it's just, shut up. You know, I wouldn't have been able to live life on life's terms, is what I'm trying to say, if I hadn't come here, you know. I've been in other meetings. And I got sober, but I didn't get recovery, you know. I didn't get emotional sobriety. You know, all I got was holding on at my seat and praying for nothing. You know, when I came here, I was given clear guidance how to recover, how to remain and stay recovered on a long-term basis, you know, through sponsorship, suggestions, service. And life's good. I'm going to leave it there.